906.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Late last week, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, also known as REGGIE, made a major decision with implications for the environment, utilities, and their customers across 9 northeastern states, including New Hampshire. With REGGIE, the region sets a cap on overall power plant carbon emissions, and companies have to pay for the right to pollute more, with the proceeds going to new energy efficiency projects. It's often described as a market-based approach toward reducing carbon, and in the 4 years it's been in place, power companies actually have had little trouble meeting its emissions caps. 2 reasons. One, the recession cut down on overall economic activity, and by extension, the amount of carbon utilities produced. And 2, the sudden plunge in natural gas prices has led many to switch from coal to this cleaner power source. And so as this new REGGIE reality became apparent, environmental groups pushed for lower carbon caps to promote what they called real reductions. But in New Hampshire, REGGIE's always faced a skeptical audience, those who question whether it really works, how much it increases cost to consumers, and who benefits from the money the program raises. Now REGGIE officials want to create even tighter caps, lowering emissions more, which could be a tough sell for some lawmakers, already skeptical about New Hampshire staying in the program. Today in The Exchange, cutting carbon caps under a revised REGGIE. Let's hear from you. Do you feel that REGGIE is doing its job, or could it be even tougher? Have you benefited from REGGIE proceeds, or have you paid a price? And do you think that REGGIE is a model for other regions, or has it run its course? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. With me in studio, Grant Bossy, editor of New Hampshire Watchdog, an independent news site. He's written a lot and has been skeptical of REGGIE. And Grant, nice to see you. Thank you for being here.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Also with us, David Borden, Democratic State Representative from Ryan, Newcastle, Chair of the House Science, Technology, and Energy Committee. And Representative Borden, good to have you too. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, before we go into this announcement of REGGIE officials wanting to lower carbon caps for the Northeast, if we could, Representative Borden, just go over what REGGIE is, how it's supposed to work. Give us your best definition, Representative Borden, of REGGIE.
Well, 5 years ago, as you mentioned, New England states agreed on a cap for greenhouse gases being emitted from power plants, the power plants that generate electricity. And the cap, basically, the power plants get allowances, and these are basically permits to produce carbon dioxide, and they pay for the permit if it exceeds the cap. And the receipts, in other words, there are funds that go into a kitty, let's say, and those funds are used toward reducing consumption of electricity, but also other fuels as well.
So it creates sort of a virtuous cycle. Companies have an incentive to clean up their acts, to produce less carbon. And whatever money is raised from the proceeds of these auctions, as they're called, goes into energy efficiency projects, lowering energy usage even more. So there's sort of a double whammy there.
That's correct. And we use overall about $6 billion worth of energy in the state. Most of it's imported. And we could probably reduce our energy consumption by about $2 billion if the proper programs are in effect. And that's REGGIE is one of those programs that will ultimately lead to a big savings.
You know, Grant, if I could turn to you, you're a free market guy, and cap and trade programs like REGGIE have been billed as market-based solutions toward reducing carbon. The less a utility emits, the less it pays. It's rewarded for being super clean. What's wrong with REGGIE, in your opinion?
Well, there's nothing inherently unconservative about a cap-and-trade program. The problem is with implementation. And REGGIE was superseded by events. You talked about fuel switching. You talked about the recession. And the problem with central planning, when you put a cap at one end and a price floor at the other, is that if the assumptions you make in setting those artificial limits aren't true, then your whole regulatory scheme falls apart. And that's what happened with REGGIE. they set these caps hoping to that there would be a bidding war for the amount of carbon dioxide. That's the whole reason for the program is we're going to keep producing all this carbon dioxide unless we do something.
The assumption then was wrong.
The assumption was that carbon dioxide emissions would keep going up and up and up. And for reasons entirely separate from the REGI program, carbon dioxide emissions went down. So the demand that was fueling the entire regulatory scheme simply evaporated. And you were left with a program that simply went away. The auctions were going between $3 and $3.50 a ton for the first year or so. For the past 3.5 years, though, we've been on the price floor, and a half to a third of the allowances that are out there simply go unsold. They don't need them because they're not burning dinosaurs. They're getting fuel from other sources. They're using natural gas, which is less carbon intensive. All the assumptions that were built into this cap and trade scheme simply didn't come true. So you're left with states with much lower revenues than they'd planned. The New Hampshire REGI program vastly overspent based on the early auction results. They gave away about 3.5 years worth of grants in the first 2 years and haven't given away money in a couple of years now because it simply hasn't been there. So this call to lower the cap is a central planning response to a central planning failure. Let's rejigger the assumptions to create that bidding war at a lower level, and they're trying to drive up the price of REGI allowances and get that revenue stream restarted.
So the market mechanisms haven't quite worked as planned,
well,
you're saying?
Yeah, because you're putting artificial limits on the market. If you'd taken away that price floor, you'd let REGI credits drop to where they normally would have been. You would have sold all your carbon allowances, but that wouldn't have generated the revenues that states are looking for. So they're using some market forces in a very highly regulated artificial framework to do so. And as you said, when you make a mistake in central planning, your entire scheme can get overtaken by events.
Well, and Representative Borden, over the years, criticism of REGI has come up, not only on the sort of skewed market mechanisms that Grant talks about, but also concerns over cost to consumers, over who gets the proceeds to use for energy efficiency project, why one project is chosen over another. And New Jersey jumped out of the program a year or so back. What was that about, Representative Borden? What do you remember?
I think that was leadership from the governor. Governor Christie decided they should pull out, and it has had mixed results. But I'd like to say that Grant Bossy's argument is really an argument in favor of lowering the cap. We use a good deal more carbon dioxide in fossil fuel in producing electricity than our European counterparts. So we should keep tightening the cap down so that we become more equivalent of other countries.
Does Europe have a cap-and-trade mechanism for its utilities, Representative Borden?
It varies country by country, but there's much more control over greenhouse gases. In some cases, they have a carbon tax, which some people don't like in this country, and this isn't about carbon tax, so I won't go there. But I think that there's another point that the REGI Inc. always intended to reduce and lower the cap over time. And the current review of REGI was scheduled from the beginning.
I remember that. And we did a program on that when REGI came up for review. I've got another question for you, Grant, as well. But I also want to invite our listeners to join us. Our number here in the Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the Exchange, again, we're looking at REGI, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, once touted as a model of a cap-and-trade program for reducing carbon emissions. We're taking another look at this program, given that REGI officials now want to lower emission caps for the region. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Do you think that REGI is doing its job in terms of reducing carbon? Could it be even tougher? Have you benefited from some of the REGI proceeds that we've talked about? Or do you think it's raised your electric rates? You've paid a price for REGI. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And Grant, to you, we talked about how New Jersey pulled out a few years ago. New Hampshire came pretty close, right?
Yeah, the House and Senate both passed REGI repeal. Governor Lynch vetoed it. They overcame the veto in the House. came, I think, two votes short in the Senate of pulling New Hampshire out of the RGGI program. They made some very small changes in how the money is allocated, but basically we're still in. RGGI operates on 3-year compliance periods. And so we've finished the first 3-year period. We're into the second 3-year period now. So the next kind of window, if New Hampshire would like to repeal it, would the logical step, we could just pull out immediately, but it makes more sense to wait for the end of the compliance period. It would be in about 2 years.
The argument, though, against pulling out, Grant, and I'm sure you've heard this before, is power is produced regionally, so even if New Hampshire pulled out, we'd still be paying the costs of RGGI because the other states are involved.
That's completely untrue. It's just factually incorrect. RGGI is a regulatory cost. It is a covered regulatory cost, and the cost of complying with RGGI is built back into our electric rates at the state level. So if New Hampshire pulls out of this, those costs go away because they're no longer built into the rates. It's a state-by-state cost. It's not that we would be paying somewhere else. It's a covered cost. So every state that pulls out will end up paying very slightly lower electric rates. One of the benefits to consumers of the RGGI market drying up is that the impact on ratepayers has been very minimal. It's been very, very small. And one of the concerns about lowering this cap would be that the impact on ratepayers would actually increase down the line.
What do you think, Representative Borden? New Hampshire came close to pulling out. Would that have hurt us or not?
I don't think the cost of RGGI for my family is about the same cost as a cup of coffee every month. And we have a business, a small market cafe in Newcastle, and that might be as much as 10 cups of coffee a month. But the value, there's a study that was done that showed that RGGI adds about $33 economic value per capita if you spread it around the regions. So I think that the actual impact of RGGI on the ratepayer is minor. I think the argument that it's going to cost a lot of money to the ratepayer is very small compared to the benefits.
All right. We will start taking your calls in just a moment after a short break. The number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email if you'd like to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, and we'll be right back.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning. And more on revising RGGI on the exchange at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show, the growing threat of cyber espionage. President Obama delivers his State of the Union speech tonight. You can hear it here on NHPR, as well as a Republican response immediately afterwards. Coverage starts tonight at 9 on NHPR and NHPR.org. New Hampshire weather today, clouds with some intermittent sunshine. A few flurries or snow showers are possible across northern New Hampshire. Highs near 35 in the north, making it up to 45 degrees in parts of southern New Hampshire. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from AutoBeef, a website allowing vehicle owners to share information about car problems and possible solutions. Listed by make and model, online at carcomplaints.com. And from North Branch Construction, 54 years experience building custom homes to multi-million-dollar eco-friendly commercial buildings. On time, on budget, online at northbranch.net. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're debating further reductions to carbon emissions from power plants in the Northeast under a program known as the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or RGGI. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And gentlemen, we've been talking about how RGGI officials want to lower the caps here in the Northeast. Again, because it hasn't been that tough for companies to meet these caps given the economy and given the switch to natural gas. Representative Borden, to you, so how much carbon would be pulled out under these lower caps? How many more tons are we talking about?
I'll let Commissioner Burak answer that question. But it would be fairly substantial, but it's going to bring us down to levels, and I believe it's about 8 years ago. So it's not that we're cutting carbon emission in half or going to put power plants out of business.
Well, and you mentioned Commissioner Burak, and that would be Tom Burak, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services, who joins us now on the phone. And Commissioner Burak, thanks for making the time this morning. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Well, we've been talking about the new proposal just a couple days ago to lower the carbon emission caps here in the Northeast. You're one of two New Hampshire representatives to Reggie. Why do you think this is a good idea?
Well, it's a good idea for a number of reasons, but fundamentally what we're doing is building on the success of Reggie in using the market and the power of economics and the marketplace to achieve both environmental improvement and economic growth. And what we're going to do by lowering the cap to the current actual emissions of about 91 million tons a year is going to allow us to lock in the significant reductions that have already occurred in power plant emissions over the past 3 to 5 years or so, and at the same time to help drive further reductions. So there have been a lot of changes that have occurred, more than we had anticipated, perhaps, because of the investments that we've made in energy efficiency, because of the rapid emergence of natural gas as a low-cost fuel for electrical generation, because of the economic downturn, and because of changes in weather. But overall, we're much lower in terms of actual emissions than we had anticipated that we would be at this point. So it only makes sense for us to lock in those reductions and move forward from here. This is going to ensure that we're really protecting the environmental integrity and the effectiveness of the program and sending important signals to the marketplace about the need to continue to reduce carbon dioxide emissions, and certainly by continuing the program and investments in energy efficiency, we're strengthening the overall Reggie region's leadership in clean energy development and infrastructure, and really continuing to set the example that others, we hope, will follow, and in fact are following, such as in California.
So right now we're putting out here in the Northeast 91 million tons of carbon, is that what you said?
Carbon dioxide emissions out of our larger power plants on an annual basis.
Okay, and so the goal is, as the economy improves, you don't want the power plants to go back to producing more, so you're locking that 91 million in now, and then year by year you reduce it a little bit more.
That's right. We're looking at a reduction in 2014. The cap would be at 91 million tons, and then in each of the 6 years thereafter, we would reduce by 2.5% per year.
What do you think the impact's going to be on the environment? I mean, is this a lot of reductions, or is it just a little bit? Because I've read some saying, Commissioner Burak, on one side, you could go a lot deeper than this. This isn't very bold.
Well, I think it's important to understand that when we set up Reggie in the first place, the goal was to create a modest effort to show that we could, in fact, achieve reductions by working together. And that's exactly what we've done, and we're going to build on this and continue to achieve further modest reductions.
But you agree it's modest.
I don't think it's any secret that we recognize that over the long term, out to about 2050, we need to achieve very significant reductions in our greenhouse gas emissions across the region and across the country. And this is an important step in getting us there.
And then on the other side of this equation, there's been people saying, look, this is going to raise the cost of electricity. Power plants will pass that on to customers. And that's bad for the economy. What do you think?
Well, interestingly, when we do the economic modeling and we really do the analysis, we come to some very different conclusions. We expect that allowance prices are going to remain quite modest. And one of the provisions that we're recommending in the revisions to the program is inclusion of a cost containment reserve so that if there did appear to be a situation where prices might spike, we could very quickly make additional allowances available in order to be able to control those price spikes. But in fact, as we look at the net impact to consumers, we project it's going to be very small. Across the region, average electricity bills for residential, commercial, and industrial customers are projected to increase less than 1%, again, across the region. And within New Hampshire, because of some new provisions that were effective just this January, many residential bills could actually decline slightly. Overall, we see positive economic developments here for the state. Because as we continue to invest in energy efficiency, which has a long-term payoff on it, we're actually bringing down the overall cost of electricity for everybody because we're helping to avoid the need to build new facilities to provide what we call peaking capacity that would operate only a very few days a year when demand is highest. And if we can avoid having to build those, we save energy costs for everybody.
Commissioner Burak, one last question for you. As you know, Reggie had kind of a rocky road the last 2 years in the legislature. Are you optimistic, pessimistic? How are you feeling about the legislature being convinced that these caps should be lowered? As I understand, in New Hampshire, you need legislative support.
That's right. In order for these recommendations to be enacted, we will need to have the support of the legislature in doing so. And I'm cautiously optimistic that the legislature will see fit to adopt these recommendations. We've been meeting with and briefing many legislators. We anticipate holding a number of meetings with interested parties, including a public information meeting this coming Friday at 11 o'clock, and working with everybody to determine the best path forward, again, with the goal of seeing these reforms enacted this year to be effective January 1 of 2014.
Okay, Tom Burek, thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
That's Tom Burek, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. And Grant Bossy, to you real quickly, Commissioner Burek there saying, look, these are modest reductions. They're not really going to affect people's bottom lines.
The current cap is 165 million tons. And this is, again, from a subset of fossil fuel generating plants in nine states. Doesn't include transportation, doesn't include agriculture. It is a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of total carbon dioxide and greenhouse gas output. Reggie has always been much more symbolic than pragmatic. So we're not talking about anything that's environmentally protective at all. It will have literally no effect on global carbon dioxide concentrations. The proposal is to lower that cap from 165 million to 91 million immediately, and then 2.5% a year for 6 years. That would bring it down to 78 million. So you're essentially cutting in half the cap on five fossil fuel power plants in New Hampshire and several dozen around the nine-state region. The cost containment mechanism that the commissioner mentioned only kicks in if the price more than doubles to $4 per ton. That threshold rises to $6, to $8, then to $10 by 2017. And it's only 5 million extra tons that would be put onto the market.
So a lot of effort for very little payback.
Yeah, and so you end up with the possibility. The program is actually designed to start this bidding war so that companies have to either pay much, much more to burn coal, or they have to fuel switch. Now, the big problem with REGGIE isn't that it's too big and that it dwarfs the energy market. The problem is it's such a marginal program compared to the economic forces that are driving our energy market, that it gets swamped by the bigger changes. So let's say the forces that have made REGGIE irrelevant, what if they reverse themselves? What if the economy picks up and the demand for energy picks up? If natural gas prices spike, then everybody's going to want to go back to coal. And suddenly this modest cut that they're looking at will be incredibly restrictive. And you'll see a large demand for coal. So the problem is that the same program that failed to anticipate the last 5 years of REGGIE can't really anticipate the next 5 years of REGGIE. We don't really know what the costs are.
Well, we just heard again from Commissioner Burek at the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services, a big supporter of the REGGIE program. We go now to someone who has had some concerns about REGGIE. Jeb Bradley is with us, Republican Senator from Wolfboro and Senate Majority Leader. And Senator Bradley, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Laura. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. So how do you feel about this announcement that just came down a couple days ago about REGGIE officials wanting to lower the caps here in the Northeast?
At first I didn't understand it when it was brought to my attention last week, but now having actually done some research on it, I have some grave concerns as to the implications of it, that it's going to drive up energy costs and, I think for minimal benefit, quite frankly, for New Hampshire. Now, there is, I would say, Laura, in what we did to reform REGGIE last year, we have built in some consumer protection mechanisms that any money raised above the $1 threshold is rebated back to customers. But that being said, it would hit energy producers in the state, as the previous speaker talked about. So I'm pretty skeptical about it at this point.
Commissioner Burek and others, Senator Bradley, have said that the price impact is pretty small. It's been pretty small so far, and they expect it to be pretty small in the future. So there seems to be some disagreement there about the impact.
Well, again, going up to the price levels that people are thinking it could go up to is going to have a fairly significant impact on energy suppliers in New Hampshire. I mean, that's just the nature of how RGGI works. Maybe some people think that's not significant. I tend to disagree with that. And I think that, you know, we've done a pretty good job in New Hampshire going back to legislation that I sponsored in, I think it was the year 2000, that created the energy efficiency programs and the program to help low-income folks pay their bills. These have established good core programs for energy efficiency. And so what we did with the RGGI amendment last year is dedicate more money into those programs because they actually had the best bang for their dollar. And I think that rather than, increase the sort of grants under RGGI, which a lot of people are going to advocate for, we'd be better off with those core programs.
Again, the grants are money from the auctions, proceeds that have gone to different energy efficiency projects. Some of those have been more controversial than others. I just want to step back with you, Senator Bradley, if I could. You've been looking at these issues of the environment and energy for a long time, both as a member of the legislature and also as a member of Congress. What other approach, if not through a cap-and-trade regime like RGGI, should the state, should the region take toward reducing carbon? Or is this not really an important goal at this point? We shouldn't even be focusing on this. What do you think?
Well, I think that when we passed legislation going back another 10 years, I think it was in 2001, that created the, you know, first in the nation for pollutant power plant bill, we did make a commitment to reducing carbon in New Hampshire. And these core programs utilities run, which help individuals, homeowners, businesses, reduce their energy demand, that has a good effect of reducing nitrogen and mercury.
And Senator Bradley, I think we're losing you there on the cell phone, and I do apologize. I know you're heading out to a lot of meetings today. Thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
All right. Thank you, Laura.
All right. Bye-bye. Again, the exchange number for you to join us with your questions or comments about a proposed lowering of carbon emission caps under the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Borden, your thoughts on what we heard from Senator Bradley, some real concerns that costs could go up, and some ideas that, look, there are better ways to reach the goal than this sort of complicated RGGI scheme. What do you think?
Well, I think we're missing a point here. The impact of RGGI is on the amount of smoke coming up out of the smokestack of the generator. But the far greater impact and much more long term is on reduction of demand, energy efficiency. And, for example, one RGGI program worked with low-income housing in manufactured housing centers, and they found that by weatherizing homes, every three homes they weatherize, the fourth home heats for free. And a similar program is going on in factories and commercial and industrial complexes where the demand, they've managed to reduce demand not only for electricity but for home heating oil and so on. Dramatically. We have high electric rates but in the state, but the best way to reduce your rates is by tightening up your demand for electricity. And that's happening dramatically. And RGGI has done a really good job of helping us understand better how this works, how we can tighten up, how we can reduce our energy consumption in the factory floor. And I think that's the big benefit. The other thing that is very important is that this is not something that you reduce this year. You're reducing it virtually forever so that the payback goes on and on.
Again, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. And Representative Borden, Grant Bossy, let's take some calls now. Jack has been waiting in Barrington. Hi, Jack. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First, I'd like to give a shout out to David Borden, who's been strong on these issues for a very long time. The point I'd like to make is, I believe Grant suggested that one of the reasons RGGI has failed is that natural gas appeared on the scene and automatically reduced our amount of carbon, and therefore we don't need to worry about these things. And my contention is, to get back to the old saw about silver bullets and silver BBs, Natural gas is just one of the BBs. We have a lot of work to do here. We have to reduce our energy consumption dramatically. So natural gas is great, but it's not the answer.
So let's look at a wide array. And Reggie, you think Jack is one of those options?
I think it's necessary. I think it not only helps promote energy efficiency, but it raises consciousness. I mean, we have a lot. Like I said, we have a lot of work to do, and building efficiency is one of those things that this program helps fund.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling. What do you think, Grant?
I never claimed that natural gas solved the problem. It was one of the reasons why the price for the carbon credits dropped so much. And if natural gas prices go back up again, then the demand for these carbon credits is going to go back up. And I take issue with the premise that we need to use less energy, that somehow the United States uses too much energy. I know that's a common refrain on the left, but energy is the economy. It drives the economy. Electricity and other forms of energy drive economic efficiency and dramatically improve quality of life. So I just don't buy the premise that we're using too many megawatts.
Although at some point, Grant, and I'm sure you know this, too much energy production, to use that phrase, does reduce quality of life. Look at China. They're having major health problems there. They've had to – their economy's actually been hurt by the amount of pollution that they're spewing out into the air. So at some point, there's a cost to having dirty air, as they're seeing in China. I just wonder what you think about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. And as countries get more prosperous, they start buying back clean air and clean water. It's in environmental terms, it's called a Kuznets curve, so that as you go through the Industrial Revolution, for instance, you're willing to put up the gains you make in terms of your economy outweigh the costs of pollution. And at you get to a certain point, you start tackling pollution. And the United States started doing that about 40 years ago, well before the government programs that were put in place to address them. Our air and water started getting a lot cleaner. And that's a good thing. But the private market is driving that. And the idea that less total energy consumption is a good idea, I just don't buy it. I think we need more energy from more sources. And if we can get them from cleaner sources, that's fantastic. Love to do it. But the idea that Reggie is doing anything on the margins to actually impact energy consumption in New Hampshire, in New England, in the United States, it's just not. It's just not a big enough program to make any difference.
Well, and Representative Borden, I'll let you jump in on that after a very short break. We'll keep taking your calls to 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org.
This is NHPR, where support comes from UR members and the co-op food stores of Hanover, Lebanon, and White River Junction, pursuing cooperative commerce for the greater good of members, employees, and the greater community. And the New Hampshire Dental Society's Give Kids a Smile campaign, helping children and families across New Hampshire through February. Information, dates, and locations at nhds.org. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
Today on Word of Mouth, to be or not to be, that is the adventure. The number one most funded publishing project on Kickstarter turns Hamlet into a choose-your-own-adventure fantasy. And conducting from the chair, violinist Joshua Bell talks about the challenges of playing and conducting at the same time and diving deep into the works of Beethoven. Word of Mouth crescendos today at noon on NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, a recap of President Obama's State of the Union Address. We'll hear highlights and get your reaction. You can email us your thoughts in advance if you'd like at nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at possibly revising REGGIE, the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. REGGIE officials said late last week that they want to lower the caps under the Agreement on Carbon Emissions, having power plants in the region tighten up even more. Our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. How do you feel REGGIE has done so far in doing its job? Could it be even tougher? Have you been one of the beneficiaries of REGGIE proceeds and the energy efficiency projects we talked about? Or do you feel that your home or your business have paid a price for REGGIE? Also, as other regions look at REGGIE, do you think it provides a model for others? Or do you think it is not a good idea? It's run its course and is too modest to make a difference. Our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Representative Borden, to you, Grant Bossie's comment and comments that others have made that Reggie's pretty modest, that it doesn't do that much overall. So why are we bothering? What do you think?
It is modest. It's not an enormous amount of money. We should be spending $2 billion on this problem, but that's not going to come from the general fund, I can assure you. But this is leveraged money. Reggie programs that are going on in private businesses leverage about $3 for every dollar of Reggie. And that's enough of an incentive for a company to really figure out how they can reduce their energy consumption. So this is a program that creates leverage. It also does create jobs, around 400 jobs, more or less, according to the analysis group, was a study that was done last year. So those are skilled jobs or jobs that in blowing insulation into people's houses, in helping them reduce, and the jobs are spread out all over the state. So we're using a small amount of money, relatively small, to leverage a much larger amount of money and generate jobs and also understanding about how this works. A town, for example, has a real tough time understanding how they're going to get the town hall to use less energy. But if they can get there, they have savings that goes on and on.
Well, and when we've done programs on Reggie before, we've heard from some people who say their town halls got a Reggie grant. They were able to tighten up. They're saving a lot more money, and they're emitting a lot less carbon into the air. So those are the Reggie proceeds that we're talking about, Representative Borden. But as you know, the legislature in the past has, we could nicely put it, borrowed some of the Reggie funds for general fund needs. Some people have said the Reggie fund was raided by the legislature in past budget cycles. What are the chances that could happen again?
When I was a kid, a guy was cutting down a tree, and I asked him which direction it was going to fall, and he said, "I'm not a prophet." So I don't think we have. One more thing I'd like to say. I think that energy policy in the state, this is a wonderful state. The legislature is a much more moderate legislature now and very interested in energy policy. It has to achieve three things. One is add to the GDP and create jobs. It has to save money for both businesses and individual residents and towns, and it has to do no harm. And we do know that greenhouse gases do harm, and we do know that reducing demand lowers greenhouse gases probably more dramatically than anything else we can do.
All right. Well, I know you have to go to a meeting, Representative Borden. I want to thank you for giving us your time this hour.
Thank you, Laura, and thank you, Grant.
That's David Borden. He's a Democratic state representative from Ryan, Newcastle, and chair of the House Science, Technology, and Energy Committee. We'll continue to take your calls for the next 10 minutes. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org. What do you think about this idea, Grant Bossie, that the legislature has, let's just say, borrowed from these dedicated pots of money before, and they might do so again?
They've done that with every dedicated fund in the state. Money is money, and if you've got a bunch sitting around, the legislature is going to take it. The good news, I guess, for Reggie supporters is there's no money in the Greenhouse Gas Emissions Reduction Fund right now because auction proceeds have been so slow that they don't have this big pot of money that they had at the beginning. And when the legislature was facing a really dire budget crisis 4 years ago, they saw, you know, several million sitting in the Reggie fund and they went and they got it. But there's just not that kind of money in there now. In fact, a couple of years ago, they had overpromised from the Reggie auction proceeds and they had to wait a full year for the auction revenues to come in to keep paying the grants that they'd already awarded. So they haven't given out awards in quite some time. I'd like to take issue with the premise that every dollar that Reggie spends somehow creates $3 or $4 out there. The idea that you take money out of the private economy, funnel it through government, redirect it back towards a favored beneficiary, that it somehow creates jobs, is just ridiculous. You take money out of one place, you put it back somewhere else, it transfers jobs. It doesn't create them. And in some cases, it it wastes money because it goes into things that don't have any economic impact whatsoever. We've spent something like $1.4 million essentially on propaganda, giving to groups at UNH and Clean Air, Cool Planet to kind of go out and spread the message on how great Reggie is.
We spent to talk about energy efficiency.
To talk about energy efficiency and to promote the program and to study the program and to do these bootstrapping analysis that talks about all the benefits but never talks about any of the costs. It's about $1.4 million in propaganda. We've given $330,000 to Dartmouth College to lower their electric bills. I went to Dartmouth. I love Dartmouth. They don't need the money. We've given $150,000 to Stonyfield Yogurt to lower their electric bills. Like Stonyfield Yogurt, Gary Hirschberg's created a lot of jobs in New Hampshire. He doesn't need the money.
These are some of the energy efficiency projects. The dollars went to these institutions to help them tighten up. But could you argue, Grant, this is the other side, that, you know, there is an overall benefit. Sure, why Dartmouth and why not, you know, another college? But there is a benefit to Dartmouth College pumping out less carbon using less energy.
Well, there's always a benefit to getting a check from the government. There's always a benefit. The question is, does that benefit outweigh the cost? And is it worth raising everybody's electric rate just a little? Not a lot. I'm not saying it's a lot. Raising everybody's electric rates just a little so that some people can save money on their electric bill, that we can pay people to go around and conduct energy audits, which don't put in a single storm window. They just tell you to put in storm windows, but we're still spending the money. Energy audits in and of themselves don't do anything. They teach. They're educational. They're not environmental.
You assume that people act on that information.
And then they've got to find the money to actually put in their storm windows. Energy efficiency is great. Lots of people should do it. The question is, does subsidizing energy efficiency, how much are we paying people to do things they would already do themselves or should already do themselves? And then we assume that none of this stuff would have happened if we hadn't given them the money to do it. We're assuming Dartmouth College wouldn't have improved their energy programs. We're assuming Stonyfield wouldn't have updated their infrastructure if not for Reggie. And then we claim every dollar of benefit that comes from that. And it's just not intellectually honest.
Let's take another call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. David's calling from Bedford. Hi, David. Thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Yes. Good morning, Laura.
Morning.
Yes, I'm calling just to point out something that I've noticed on when we have conversations about the environment and about climate change, is that sometimes people will take a stance and then they'll come up with sayings about statistics, whatever. And if they make mistakes, I think it's responsible for the media to also come back and call them on it, because there's been a couple of times where I've noticed where a statement has been said, like this morning, where the one of the speakers mentioned something about pollution controls back in the 70s being instigated by the market, whereas what really happened was the Clean Air and Water Act was developed at that time, and that had a huge impact on making our environment cleaner.
You know, I'm so glad you called, Dave, because it's a great point. And also, that's sort of the beauty, if I could say, of the exchange, is that things happen fast. There's a lot of information, and we love callers calling in and raising points that they care about. So I appreciate that. So you're saying the market didn't clean up the air and the water in the 70s. It was the EPA and the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act.
Right. I'm saying that it had a large impact on directing the market. The market, sure, they did have a big contribution, and it did a lot of self-correcting at that time, but a lot of that is based on what happens with legislative action and how perception governs the marketplace.
Okay. David, thank you very much for calling in. Grant, we're not talking so much about water. We're talking more about air, but the water example, people here in Concord say, look, before the Clean Water Act, you wouldn't dare go near the Merrimack River. Now people fish in it, swim in it, boat on it.
Air and water pollution improved more in the decade before the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act than it improved in the decade after the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act. Maybe that's because we got the low-hanging fruit. Maybe we got the easy stuff done faster. And I'm not saying the Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act had no impact. Maybe it made things better faster than it otherwise would have. You can't really know. But we were on the right track before we had a federal law, because companies were getting more efficient, because states were acting, because communities were acting, and the idea that you need central planning to solve these environmental problems simply isn't supported by history.
I wonder if some of that pre-Clean Water, Clean Air Act cleanup happened, Grant, because companies knew it was coming. There were murmurings. Often, you know, the private sector knows that regulation is coming, so they get on it before it actually happens.
Well, pollution is wasteful by its very nature. It is inefficient. So anytime you can reduce byproducts, not have to pay for getting rid of byproducts, turn byproducts into actual products, reduce your energy consumption. These are things that businesses love to do. Businesses love paying lower electric bills. They've got huge incentives to improve energy efficiency on their own, whether there's a Clean Water Act, a Clean Air Act, or a REGI program out there, and they should do it.
This is another email that just came in from Jim in Concord. He says, sounds like your guests may agree that lowering the emissions cap while protecting ratepayers may be the best case scenario. Senator Bradley suggested that the changes he made to the REGI program last session protected ratepayers while still investing in energy efficiency. Jim asks, wouldn't a lower emissions cap with built-in ratepayer protection be the best of both worlds? And I think Jim's right, Grant, when the legislature made some changes, it did put in a sort of circuit breaker for ratepayers.
Yeah,
if it got too crazy, they wouldn't have to pay more.
It got so that most of the money in the program gets poured back into these core efficiency programs so that the utilities use to give back to ratepayers to improve energy efficiency in their house. They're the most popular ones. They avoid things like giving money to Dartmouth College and Stonyfield. They go to residential ratepayers largely. And they're more popular and they're more populist. But it still means that everybody pays a little bit more and some people will get the benefits and some people won't. It's a legislative question. Tom Burek doesn't get to vote on this. I don't get to vote on this. We've got 424 people at the State House that get to decide whether REGI needs to be clamped down on. And I'm just trying to bring up the actual numbers that should inform that debate.
It is interesting, though. We've been talking again with our last caller who talked about, you know, classic legislation, regulation saying, no, you can't do this anymore. Then you've got REGI. It's a different approach. What do you think, Grant? Is there an advantage to REGI, which at least has some market mechanisms, versus the sort of command and control regulation approach?
There's a couple of ways you could go. You could just say, no, you can't emit more carbon, or you get to emit this much carbon and no more.
Right.
And that distorts the market very heavily. You've got REGI, which says we'll do this cap and trade system. It's really just a cap system because there's been no secondary market. The secondary market in REGI has been non-existent
because the price is
almost out since the beginning. There's no trading. In fact, the exchanges that had REGI carbon futures on them stopped selling them. So there's been no trading in the secondary market, which reduces a lot of the market effect that you're looking for. So that's less disruptive. And then you've got something like a carbon tax, which says we don't care how you do it. We don't care how much you do it. We think there's a cost to society, so we're just going to tax you on it. And then that also gives government a lot more money. That is less disruptive still. And then at the other end, you simply say, look, we don't like carbon. We'd like to try some things to discourage you from emitting carbon, but we're not going to actually regulate you and permitting it. That is less disruptive still, and people think it won't have much effect. So you've got a gamut of choices from more disruptive to less disruptive on the energy market.
Let's take one more call if we could. This is Paul. Hi, Paul. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I don't really want to comment on REGI. I just wanted to talk about some of what I think are absurd statements being made. Talking about the history of legislation around the environment, there may be some incentives for companies to save electricity, but there's not a lot of incentives for companies not to be dumping pollutants and doing those sorts of things. There's all of these externalities aren't accounted for in our economic system, and so what happens is we all end up paying for all of the pollution. We're all going to end up paying, and our descendants are going to end up paying for what we're doing to the planet right now. And the idea that we need to be producing more energy. We live in a country that has 1/6 of the planet's population and uses over 25% of the planet's energy. It's just an absurdity, and none of these things are being challenged in any way that I think is effective. The market left to its own would continue us down this path. There are economic incentives for corporations to do things to save energy, do things like that, but the market left to its own. And in fact, when we look at all of, we don't have child labor laws anymore because of organizing and because of legislation. Some of the issues around pollution, there's been a whole history of pushing from the bottom and responding from the top on that. And I'm just appalled by some of the statements that are being made.
Well, and Paul, I'm really glad you joined in our conversation. And it's an important point, Grant. You know, you said companies certainly do have incentives to use less energy, but they didn't have incentives, he's saying, until the government came in and said, look, you can't dump in the Merrimack River anymore.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean a federal top-down approach. The externalities should be paid for. We should find market mechanisms to make sure that true markets account for all costs and all benefits. And pollution is one of them. But saying you need a centrally planned or originally planned program to do it is a whole nother set of assumptions. And I think we should base it on fact and not emotion.
Well, there are lots of issues to that, how best to take into account those externalities that we keep talking about, the impacts of pollution. I want to thank everybody who called in today. I want to thank you, Grant Bossy, also for being here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Grant Bossy, he's editor of New Hampshire Watchdog, an independent news site. We heard earlier also from Representative David Borden, a Democratic state representative from Ryan, Newcastle, chair of the House Science, Technology, and Energy Committee. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Faith Meixel. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.